The information provided in this podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice or treatment. If you're concerned about your health in any way, we encourage you to consult your GP.
People don't like talking about it, but incontinence can affect anyone. You may have a friend or relative who lives with it every day, or maybe you're worried about your own incontinence. Incontinence Talks is here to make us all feel more confident about continence, hosted by former Olympian rower and Coloplast ambassador Pete Reed. This time, Pete is joined by ISC users and Coloplast ambassadors Samantha Cole and Danny Logan to share their experiences of ISC.
So Samantha and Danny, it's so wonderful to see you again. It's lovely to have you on the podcast. Are there any ways to overcome the stigma of self-catheterization? Samantha?
Well, I'll start because I've been self-catheterizing since I was 18. I'm now 46, so I'm quite a dab hand at it now. I've seen the impression of self-catheterization from multiple different perspectives because I started doing it in South Africa, then I moved to the UK, and the sort of healthcare systems are very different. I also have a stoma, and I've noticed a real difference between how people act towards those with stomas versus self-catheterization. It seems no one's talking about ISC.
Why do you think that is?
I've had a good old think about this, and I think partly it's very much an intimate process. And for stomas, people can stand on Instagram or social media with their stomas out, showing people, oh, this is what I've got attached to me. Whereas I can't go and do a live self-catheterization episode. I think it's to do with your private areas. People don't really like talking about that. And I also sometimes think there's an element of stigma related to anything toilet related. And I think that goes right back to childhood when you're potty trained and your parents are saying, don't do that, it's dirty. Getting in trouble for wetting your pants.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. I just really don't think it's in the public eye at all. And I think that needs to change.
I agree. I did some searches before we came on the show, and it's very easy to find actually very beautiful people with their stomas out, and it looks flawless. And it's almost impossible to find anything to do with, I'm going to say ISC, but for the listeners, that stands for intermittent self-catheterization. So the process of it's a medical procedure. It's putting something, I'll use big words and small words, and you'll correct me because you're both healthcare professionals, but putting something inside your urethra, so up your pee hole, whether you're male or female, it's the same process, but it's a medical procedure. It's very private and personal. And of course, you don't see that on the internet. Danny, same question. I mean, how can we increase public awareness about this? So it's a vital routine for all people that do it. Very normal routine, 5-6 times a day, 4 times a day, but no one knows about it.
Absolutely. I started catheterizing when I was 14, so very, very young. And I've had two experiences with it. That one wasn't a great experience. I wasn't given any support or guidance, you know, in terms of a specialist bladder nurse or anything like that. So I really had no idea what catheterization was. I'd just gone from having an indwelling post-surgery to being told, oh, you can't pee normally anymore, so you're going to need to use a catheter. It wasn't shown to me. I didn't see the products, and I didn't have any support. So it wasn't in the ether at all for me. I had no idea what ISC was. And then suddenly I'm being told you need to do this for an unspecified amount of time. And it was really difficult for that journey. It has got better, but even when I came back to needing to use ISC in my 20s, 30s, and now my 40s, and now I ISC full time, I was really shocked when I came back to it to find that really nothing had changed. There wasn't anything out there for me to find to prepare myself in terms of research. The only help the second time that I got was a more positive experience with the help of a bladder nurse, and that was, I suppose, where I saw that things have changed. But certainly within the general public, there was nothing out there. And the people that I spoke to about it, it really came across that they were very shocked that somebody at such a young age like me was having to do this, because to them, the word continence or bladder issues refers to an 80-year-old lady. And the only continence intimate products that they were aware of was pads. They were completely unaware of catheters or how that would work or how you would fit that into a daily routine outside of what they perceived to be a medical procedure of an indwelling catheter in hospital. So trying to figure out how that slotted into my everyday life was really difficult when there was no information out there.
You were 14 when you're going through this process, and I've never been a 14-year-old girl, but I remember being 14, and these are formative years, and your body's changing and your hormones are changing. How did you feel when you were having this first discussion about continence? And yeah, how did that process, being taught what to do, what the medical procedure is, we've already said how intimate it is. How was that for you first time around?
It was an absolutely awful experience. I was handed a bag by the nurse who wasn't a bladder nurse and just told, you know, we've taken that big tube catheter out of you now. You're still not able to pee normally. We're not sure when that will return. Handed a bag and told to get on my way. I wasn't shown the products. I wasn't taught how to do it. So I wasn't taught how to ISC. I'm very lucky that my mum was a nurse, so I did have somebody that I could talk to. But essentially, I was mortified. I felt embarrassed. I felt ashamed. I thought I was the only 14-year-old in the world that was having to experience this. And I essentially withdrew from my life. I stopped going to school. I didn't feel that I could talk to any of my peers about it. The one friend that I did tell about it couldn't really, maybe it was information overload, but she couldn't really understand it. And there was nothing out there for people. So she kind of withdrew as well. And I just shut down in terms of my life and felt like I couldn't really go out in society and really shut myself at home. And luckily, I was able to get back to some form of normal routine for a while before needing to do it again as an adult. And again, it was such a far better experience as an adult. But as a teenager, it really shaped my experience of what you can and can't talk about and made me think that, you know, something is wrong with me and this is something that does need to be, because the adults around me didn't want to talk about it either. And whether they didn't want to or they didn't know enough about it, but it was very much engendered, this is a private matter and it's about your body and about intimate areas of your body, so we really need to talk about it in really hushed tones and don't mention it around the men in the family and things like that, especially, you know, going to a Catholic school and things like that. I wasn't able to really, I just didn't feel like I had anybody that I could share it with or talk about it with, and it was a really lonely time.
And goodness, I don't want to age you, but what decade are we talking here, just so people have got an idea of society at that time?
Say in the 1990s.
Okay, cool. And so Samantha, but same for you, did you have a similar experience when you were being taught how to do it? Did somebody show you? Were they there? Because I can relate, someone was with me at the time when we went through catheterization, but this was in 2019 and it was a different world. What was your experience of being taught the process?
Yeah, my teaching experience was back in the 90s as well, and I'd actually gone through 7 years of incontinence by this point, severe incontinence, and no one ever offering to do self-catheterization. I had a little operation to try and improve my continence, and it meant that I was in complete retention afterwards. So there was no other option but to self-catheterize. And I had a nurse come and show me 5 minutes in the ward toilet with a mirror, stick it there. That was it. I was given one catheter to use for 3 months, wash and reuse.
What?
This was, bearing in mind, this was in South Africa. I wasn't followed up by anybody. I was just told to get on with it. And of course I got a lot of UTIs because, you know, what I know now compared to then, it wasn't really something I was expecting, but it did improve my incontinence a bit.
Because we've got lots of listeners that this isn't their world at all. So they'll be healthy and they'll take it for granted. In the morning, they jump up, nip to the loo, have a wee, have a poo, get clean, have a shower, and off they go. And you've used lots of big words that we're all not used to, but continence issues, if you're leaking, or voiding is the medical term, but it's, you can't stop yourself from peeing. So your options are either have an empty bladder, you think a lot about how much you drink at that time, or you wear pads or a product that just mops it up and try and get on with your day with this sort of what must feel like a dirty secret. And then after the operation, you went into full retention. So at that point, you can't pee. So could you feel? Could you feel when you were, your bladder was full?
No, I've not been able to feel my bladder being full since I was 11 due to the paralysis of the bladder. Just for a bit of background, I had a spinal cord problem and it led to paralysis of the bladder and bowel. So from the age of 11, I couldn't feel when I needed to go. I can't voluntarily go to the toilet in any way, shape or form, but I can't stop my bladder contracting when it decides to. So it was a bit of a combination of everything. And the utter shame that I felt not being able to control my bodily functions had such a massive impact on my self-esteem. And, you know, catheterizing did improve my incontinence. That operation I had didn't work for very long. So after that, I wasn't fully in retention, but I also couldn't voluntarily urinate. So it's been really difficult. And it's something, like you said, a regular person can get up in the morning, not really think about these things, go to the toilet. I have to think every minute of the day, have I got enough catheters with me?
Yep.
Where are the toilets?
Yep.
Take medication that makes my mouth really dry. I have Botox injections into my bladder.
What does that do?
So that stops the muscle from involuntarily contracting due to the nerve damage. And that is great. I was already in partial retention. It can make you go into full retention, but that's not a problem for me. I'd rather be in retention than leaking everywhere. So it stops you leaking.
So I'm just trying to remember back to my experiences of when I first had a spinal cord injury and the medical teams, so the urologists, the people that specialize in bladder, kidneys, renal system, they explain that your body now speaks a different language. And they also taught me at the time, urology is such a complex neurological system. So without digging too deep into anatomy, because I'll trip myself up, but there's a sphincter, so a valve to the bladder, which is neurologically, it's closed all of the time so that the door is closed to stop you from leaking, in my case. And what also needs to happen in a healthy person is the muscles around the bladder are relaxed so that during the day when your bladder's filling, there's space for it to move into. So you've got one system relaxed, one system contracted, and then a signal sent when your bladder is filling so your mind knows what's going on. And when you get to the loo, then the process is squeeze muscles to squeeze the bag and relax the muscles to open the door. And that's so complex without much damage at all to a spinal cord or lots of other conditions, that process just doesn't work. And Samantha, I'm in the same camp as you where the door is closed and the muscles can relax, but I can't feel. So a lot of knowing when to catheterize, it's an art more than a science, I think, and everybody knows their body well. It's making sure that you know how much you're drinking, exactly what you're drinking, what medication you're taking, where the next toilet is, and looking at your watch. Danny, does that sort of sound familiar to you as well? I know you've got a different neurology and processes going on. Maybe you can talk us through that.
Yeah, mine's a bit different. I went into full urinary retention post major surgery for a bowel tumour when I was 14. And at the time, it was thought that it was just a complication of the surgery. And there was a lot of adhesion, so they just thought it would settle. But as we've sort of moved on, I have a lifelong immune deficiency, so I'm very prone to getting infections. One of them being UTIs of the bladder, and that can move up the system to my kidneys to a kidney infection, which is pyelonephritis. And years of repeat infections of UTIs and pyelonephritis and infection has led to more scarring of the bladder itself. But I also have quite severe endometriosis that has infiltrated my bladder and my bowel, and all of those things together really has created a perfect storm. And so my bladder just, it just doesn't work anymore. And so I'm in retention all the time unless I use my catheters to pee. So I do get a lot of pain and a lot of spasms surrounding ISC still, but I am able to get relief still when I'm able to pass a catheter.
I'm speaking to the listeners now who this isn't their world and they're interested and curious for all the right reasons. So thank you for tuning in. What do you think the general public perception of UTI is?
I feel that the general perception is of something very minimal, of a very minor ailment. And that is not completely wrong. For many people, it is a very minor ailment that with proper treatment will go away very quickly after a trip to the doctor and a short course of antibiotics. But for many more people, there is a real problem with recurrent or chronic UTIs that don't necessarily always stay in the bladder. They can, as in my case, progress up to the kidneys and become a more serious kidney infection or pyelonephritis. And again, for me, that leads to I get UTI. I've been getting them since I was 5 years old. In my early days, I would get a UTI maybe once every 3 months. Now, most people would maybe get one or two bad ones in their lifetime. I'm experiencing now concurrent back-to-back, never getting a break from them, infections and UTIs that are so severe that I'm having admissions to hospital every month, and I've had 10 episodes of sepsis in the last 2 years alone. So they have become something from being seen in the public eye as something very minimal and very, you know, a very minor thing. Obviously, in my life, it is a very big thing and it affects every single aspect of my life.
You mentioned sepsis there, and I don't know much about sepsis other than it's very scary. Can you help the listeners with a definition of what it means to you, please?
So for me, where I have an immune deficiency, the infections become quite bad quite quickly. So I will go from having a normal UTI to having a very bad kidney infection, which is pyelonephritis. And that very quickly overwhelms my body system and can become what's known as sepsis, which is just an overwhelming infection within the body. And that needs admission, and it's quite dangerous, and it needs, you know, very urgent attention and usually admission to hospital for quite intense antibiotics because the infection has become so bad. And I'm really happy to see that in recent years there has been a huge campaign and drive around people making people aware of the signs of sepsis, and that's fantastic because it needs to be out there just as much as what we're talking about UTIs and continence issues. So for me, I'm very happy to see that that is gaining awareness, but living it, you know, every other month is very, very scary.
I've got a similar question for you, Samantha. Rather than being about UTIs, it's what do you think the public perception of a catheter is, or catheterization? If you just said to somebody who's not in this world, what would they think of? And how did that affect your decision to tell or not tell friends and family?
I think, if you want to call them, the lay population would say a catheter in their minds is an indwelling long-term catheter with a bag attached strapped to your leg. And they may have seen it in an elderly relative in hospital or may have had one themselves after an operation. I don't know if there's actually anyone who would know what an intermittent catheter is, that you just insert it and then discard it. And to say there's a lot of people who use them, it's not really suitable. It's not what we need. We need to be raising awareness because a lot of people use them, and if there's no awareness of it, it's harder to disclose that to somebody to say, for example, you're at work, I need to go to the toilet, I need a bit longer because they use a catheter. In my case, I was working as a doctor, so people knew what it was. But for example, if you worked in a shop, you might ask your boss, I need a bit longer to go to the toilet. And they'll be like, I don't understand. I don't know what you mean. And then you have to pull your catheter out and explain the whole process. I haven't told many people in my life. Okay. I haven't told many people. And I don't know whether that's because I've been struggling with bladder issues from a young age and I have that overarching shame feeling about it, even though now I know better. Now I'm medically trained. Now I talk openly about these things. I find it difficult to, I would rather tell someone I've got a stoma than that I self-catheterize. You would think it would be the other way around because, you know, poo is seen as a bit dirtier than urine. Mm-hmm. I find it difficult to tell people, and I tell people on a need-to-know basis.
Danny, what's your experience of the same question? How have you found talking to friends and family?
Well, as I say, I was so young at the time when I first started, and it was a negative experience, and it did, in a way, forced me to withdraw from the world, you know, and I missed out on things like my school prom and things like that because I was terrified of somebody finding out, or and I'm pretty sure that at the time I felt that, you know, perhaps boys wouldn't want to date me, things like that. And I, as I got older and I went back into retention and started to have to use catheters again, I really looked around for information and was so aware that considering so many people suffer with bladder conditions and continence issues, there was just nothing out there, especially for the younger generation. It was being only represented for the elder generation. And I really thought, this isn't right. We need support. We need this is something everybody has to pee. I just have to do it this way. And it really, I suppose by that point being medically trained, I really wanted to go out there and kind of change that. And so I did go about trying to be more honest, and it did take a little while to, especially with in terms of work and telling friends and family outside of my close-knit group. But I did find a bit of strength to be brave about it, because I thought, if I don't ever start talking about it just with the people in my circle, how will it ever get out there? So I did find that I was able to start talking to people at work, and especially in terms of allowing that to help my own routine. So by telling people, it made them aware of what my needs were. And it really did help, I think, to be able to start telling people. And once I started going down those circles, I was able to see that there is a very small community, but there is an ISC community out there, and it was really warm and really welcoming, and it's led me to where I am now.
So I don't want to age any of us, but but none of us are 18 anymore. And I'm thinking back to if this had happened in my 20s, if I'd started catheterizing, how would I have felt? But in 2019, when I had my injury, I was 38 at a different stage of life, and it made it easier for me to talk about. Samantha, you started when you were young, and now you're on a podcast talking about it, and maybe your friends and family still don't know, but they will soon. Is it, do you think, an experience thing or an age thing, where you just get to a stage of life where you said that this is really important? Or is it a society thing? It's 2025 now. This is the time to start talking about these things. For people who are starting this process and they're still 18 and 20 and a bit worried, do you have any advice for them about how to maybe broach the subject of self-catheterization with their friends and family?
Yeah, I think obviously now there's the internet. The internet wasn't around when we started self-catheterizing, was it? And there's peer support, there's Coloplast ambassadors, there's bladder nurses, there's all sorts of support. So I wonder if I started nowadays at the age I was, whether my whole experience would have been different. And telling people now, I think it's a combination of all those factors you mentioned. And I don't see why I should feel shame about it anymore. It's sort of self-imposed shame, because I wouldn't think badly of someone else who needed to use any kind of medical device. I would actually probably think, wow, they're getting on with their life. You know, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. I'd probably be interested in, oh, what's happened to you? And so I think, yeah, as I'm getting older, I'm just letting those things go. But it has been a huge source of embarrassment, low self-esteem, really, really, really difficult. And I think us talking about these things now, I hope that people are listening and saying, I'm going to go and ask for help, or I'm going to find a bit more about this, or I'm going to share this information with someone who needs it. And I think there's probably people out there who need to use it who aren't aware of it.
I totally agree. And I think it's really important to say at this stage that the more that we talk about this, the more that we all talk about this, the less sensitive it becomes. And that's true of anything, but we're adding our voice. I think if it's true that if you're offended by something, then expose yourself to it. And we're increasing that exposure. I hope it gives people confidence that they're listening to this conversation and awareness is spreading, because the listeners are going to fall into one of two categories: those who don't know anything about intermittent self-catheterization and those and don't need it or use it, and those who do. On the back of your answer, I've just thought of another category: the people who don't do it don't know about it, but actually do need to use it. So if there's something a little bit wrong and they're just a little bit too embarrassed, because whether it's a spinal cord injury, medical condition, something after an operation, they might be saying to the doctor, everything's fine, but actually it's not. They're wearing different pads, or they're concerned about their sensations, and actually they do need to see a doctor about something that's very, very normal and very clean, very hygienic. And I've said this a lot in the past, 2025 is a really great time to be into self-catheterization and to need to use it, because it's not South Africa in the 1990s where you're given a device that you need to wash and reuse.
On our next episode, Pete, Samantha and Danny continue their conversation and talk about finding the right solution for ISC. There are lots of amazing charities that can provide focused support depending on your particular needs, as well as lots of information at collarplus.co.uk. Thank you for listening to Incontinence Talks, and remember to consult your GP if you have any worries about your own continence.